Okay, the date is December 7th, 2007. My name is Doug Webster. I'm the Director of Public Relations for the California Maritime Academy. And we're interviewing Admiral Joseph Rizza, who's a past president of the California Maritime Academy. And Mr. Rizza, what's your birth date?
January the 30th, 1950.
Okay. And I'm doing the recording, and we're at the Admiral's home in Coronado, California, near San Diego. So, Admiral Rizza, I'm going to start off and ask you, what were the circumstances that brought you to Cal Maritime?
Well, I started out at a Cal Maritime school in Pennsylvania. It was a three-masted schooner, a real sailing ship. I thought when I was a young fellow, I was trying to go to academies, that I was either too short or some physical thing. However, I applied for the Pennsylvania Maritime Academy. And they selected 24, so I was one of several hundred applicants. And after I graduated from the Maritime Academy, it's a two-year program, I served in the Merchant Marine for about 6 years. And I had 6 years at sea. I enjoyed my job and I enjoyed everything, but I had greater aspirations in life, more education. When I finished my 6 years with the maritime industry, I thought this is, the world is changing rapidly. Where the graduates of this school or any academy not going to go very far with the education they have now. With the education we had now at that time, all our academies were in good shape. We were putting out officers that could handle the maritime industry at that time. I felt at that time that now, after 1981, after I spent 31 years in the Navy after I left the academy, I felt that it was very essential that Maritime Academy graduates get a better education than just 2 years, and I was set on that. So I had an opportunity to, they called me at the academy, I think the chairman of the board asked me if I'd come and visit them. Paid my way, I came to them, I didn't know what they wanted, but we sat down and I had looked over the curriculum, and there was the chairman of the board of directors and a few the faculty, I think there were some engineers. So I thought, well, I've got to really tell them the truth. I think your curriculum is about 10 years behind the times. It's okay for now, you're putting out excellent graduates, but these people are going to face major changes in the next 10 years, and if I were coming here, I want to prepare a program for the 1970s, the century of 72. So if I could do that, I'd be fine, but I wasn't too interested in a school that's not going to give a person an education to advance himself in an industry that's moving out of the closet. Mm-hmm. So
how did they locate you? Do you know how they located you and asked you to come and interview?
Well, I think the maritime, I don't know for sure, but the maritime industry, I think, was trying to get a new president to change the cabinet. Some of the industry leaders saw that, you know, this is fine for 19, whatever it was, but they needed a president to look into the future and can do it and has the education to do it. So I did have a reputation in the maritime industry. I was at the time, well, I was in the Navy at the time after I graduated from the Pennsylvania Maritime Academy. I was called active duty and I made the Navy my career in 1972. 1983. I was president of the academy. When they called me at that time, I wasn't that interested in coming, and I had to tell them, I think you're about 10 years behind the period 1970 when I think you're going to see the changes. And then I left because I liked the Navy and I was going to stay in the Navy. And then later on they called me. Oh yeah, I was in the Navy. I went on active duty. I did extremely well in the Navy. And let's see. I got a call. I was in Africa with my student body that had just finished their one-year program. I was the academic dean at that time, and we took the students that finished their papers and program on an area of the world. I took the African students on a trip to Africa. State Department arranged it to meet all the heads of government and their cabinets, because they had already finished War College, National War College, and this gave them their papers were on Africa, and so they were well educated on the regimes in Africa, and so we were visiting every government with the State Department help. We had a plane and government leaders, and we interviewed the president and his cabinet, and the students were allowed to ask questions because they learned. I think these people that they interviewed were surprised how much knowledge they had about Africa.
Yeah.
They were good students, studying hard, working hard. And I was in Uganda. We're going to get back to how I came to the academy. And I was having lunch with Idi Amin, and I knew him real well because we're briefed on these people by the CIA, on the heads of government. So we were having lunch there, and in walks the ambassador and said, you got a call from California, Governor Reagan. I said, what happened? I said, what did you tell him? The ambassador said, well, I said, you were busy interviewing Idi Amin, and he will probably call you back on the next trip. And I said, my next trip was, I forget the country now, it's a long time ago. And so I said to tell him, I'll think about it when I get back to Washington, my office. I can't make any plans now, but that was encouraging. Mm-hmm. So that when I got to, after I finished an interesting trip with an interesting group of students, it was enjoyable, and we had a lot of fun. I was pleased that these people that we were interviewing were very impressed with the knowledge of my students, so I spent well for the National War College. But anyway, when I go back to Washington to my office, I was there maybe a couple of months, two or three months, I got a call from Governor Reagan, I think it was, Governor Reagan. And he invited me. He said he'd like for me to take over the academy. By that time, I'd given him a lot of thought, and I thought that would be a good place for me to vent my disagreement that we Maritime Academy people with only 2 years of education were not going very far ahead in the new world. So I said, yes, I'll take it. In the meantime, I got a call from everybody was calling the college, Texas Maritime College called me. I was on the phone. It says, well, here you're going to the California Maritime Academy. We will top anything they give you. Well, I wasn't interested in living in Texas, and I was excited about California because that's a nice place to live. And my wife and I were in Newport, Rhode Island headquarters, and she said, fine, I would like to go to California. So I decided to accept the California appointment, and now, I did.
So I understand. The call from Reagan, was that after you had already interviewed some folks at Cal Maritime, or was it before you went
before,
to Cal? Okay.
He had called the ambassador in Uganda,
yeah.
And that's when I, what happened, why? And that made me start thinking, and that's the first time. And
now, what did the governor tell you about why he wanted you to take that job?
He didn't tell me because he spoke to the ambassador. The ambassador said, he is interviewing Idi Amin, and he'll get back to you maybe at the next port of call.
But you spoke to him in Washington. You spoke to Governor Reagan in Washington.
I spoke to him.
And at that time, what did he say to you about why he wanted you to come and be the new head of the academy?
I don't remember why. Anyway, by this time, I learned a lot about the Maritime Academy. And I also knew that there were a lot of people in the maritime industry who were encouraging me to take the job because apparently there were other applicants. That's a long time ago and I don't remember the details.
What attracted you to the job?
The opportunity to enhance the professional reputation of the future maritime officers. And I thought that's what we should do, and I felt very strong about that. And so that gave me the opportunity to accept, and when I got there, I made a lot of changes, but they had to be made. And I think the most difficult jobs, I was excited about the opportunity to do something. I didn't get a two-year program at the academy, and if I were going to stay in Merchant Marine, I want to be able to be president of one of the companies someday.
Yeah.
And so I accepted, and I had a plan already, and I knew that I was going to have a little trouble convincing these people. I knew that. That's expected. I would have been surprised if I hadn't. And so I was prepared for that. I thought I've got to have a good PR program, and I was going to really work hard on that to bring these people up to date. What we would like to do, not me, we. When I made the changes, I want it done with the concurrence of the faculty, the staff, the whole works. So I had to work on it. And that was my major project, and that's how I started with the academy. The first thing I did is make courtesy calls on the legislators who would have the academy's future in their hands. They had to provide the money for the changes I proposed, the complete reorganization, the complete improvement of the academic program, so that these people could, hopefully, we could become an accredited college and their degree would mean something. That was my starting goal. And that's what I started on.
Who else did you talk to besides legislators?
Oh boy, I talked to the faculty. I talked to the students. I talked to the parents when they come in. And I was getting a favorable reaction from the parents. They were very happy what we were doing with their students because they told me so, at least I believed them. And we had some disagreements maybe with some of the faculty. I expected that. And I thought I would have to convince. And that was my main project. I think I did well in convincing because I discussed the changes, what the future was, what I expected in the 1972, the changes that were being made over that period of time would develop ideas for further development of the industry, which they would have to have if they're going to be thinking. And that was my goal. So I got, I got good support from the faculty, the staff, because I worked with all of them, working hard to convince them that this was the right thing to do. And it began to fall on people agreeing, and I was mainly speaking about the future. These people are going to graduate from the academy. They got to have the right education and the right frame of mind and interested in the major changes taking place in technology, education, engineering, et cetera, and I spent a lot of time with the legislators briefing them, and some of the legislators weren't for it, but most of them were. Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to get that because they have to pay for it. And,
What shape was the college, the academy in when you arrived? What were the pluses and minuses of it?
I think the academy's program was fine for the graduates of the pre-war year because they had a good reputation. They were putting out people that were doing a good job in the field. The field was changing rapidly with changes, diesel engines coming in, technology changing, education. I had a whole list of things. That's a long time ago. It's hard for me to remember everything. And I persuaded the legislators to fund what I think was necessary. And I talked to people in state government, like the engineer, state engineer, the state architect, give them some idea of what we needed in buildings. How much would they cost? Can you do it? Can you help me convince the legislature? I found everything, yes, we can do that, because things were, we had to change in the laboratories and all. And so I wasn't disappointed, because if they had agreed, I was thinking they weren't paying attention, and I was serious. And so I met with just about everybody. What I had to change deans a couple of times. I was fortunate that I had a dean later, as this program developed, was a graduate of West Point, retired West Point, a person with honors, and he had been a retired president of a technical college. Just quick what I needed, because he had the background, the conviction about these changes. Colonel. I just got a note from him. He's laid up also. Wonderful guy.
Maybe put you on the spot.
He was a classmate of my brother's at West Point, so we were good friends.
Yeah.
It'll come to me. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah. It's a long time.
Now, what were the biggest challenges you had when you came in the door? What were the big stumbling blocks? Now, obviously, as you say, the school was in good shape for the times, but it wasn't looking ahead.
It was in good shape for the times pre-war.
Right.
But when I took it over, the war had been over 10 years or something, yeah. I don't remember. And I think I was able to convince everybody, we want to be the number one college in the nation, and we need to make changes and change laboratories particularly.
It was obvious from the building program that you felt the physical plant was in strong need of upgrade.
Kids were living in they were living on a ship. And that's no way. Of course, they couldn't help it. That's all we have. So I started with, we need more rooms in the residence hall. We need the better laboratory. We need more room. And the architect was helping me. what he could do and how much it would cost, because I had to present this to the legislature. So I said, now would you come with me when I go before the legislature? You're the expert on this, and you have more credibility on buildings and cost than I do. So he did, and he helped me a lot.
Now, how did you build the you couldn't convince the legislature solely by yourself.
I convinced a lot of them.
They
needed better education. Here's what the legislatures were saying. This is a small college. We only had, I think it's 200 people, and I agree. And it's costing us a lot of money to put in for a small college. I agreed with that too. But I said, we can't continue that way. And also, I felt that there was talk about eliminating the school. They had good reasons, because I probably would have myself if I saw the cost, only 200 people, and the cost of the state colleges is going up, and the money is going to go to them rather than a little school like the Maritime Academy. I think there were some plans, and I don't know if they're true, but there were plans. I heard that there was a plan that, well, the school is so small, rather than close it, why don't we turn it over to the chancellor and let him run it? And I thought, if the chancellor's going to run it, you know where his money, the budget's going to be going to state colleges. And then I thought I had a meeting, which I went down, had a meeting with him, and I said about the change, because he was going to support that change, and I didn't like it. I didn't tell him that, but I thought, as a chancellor, your budgets are going to be tight, and I can see where I'm going to be down at the bottom, and some people maybe want to close it. So rather than you take it, let me run the academy and handle the budget, because what I'm afraid of is nobody's looking out for my budget. I can do it better, and I knew I could. I had a lot of experience by this time. So it was done that way. I was on my own for the budget, and I appeared before the committees that are relevant to what the budget was about, and I had some arguments for and some arguments against. I mean, I think one, I don't know what else you put that here, if you're going to put that in writing. I tell you, one of the legislators who was chairman of the finance committee says, we don't need a military academy in California. Well, I knew he didn't know what he's talking about. We're not a military academy. So, and one of the legislators that represented my district was sitting by me, because I wanted him to help me. And I said to him, I said, I don't need to be insulted. I think you can look for a new president. He said, Joe, don't take that serious. They talk to everybody that way. And they do, and I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was a little hurt because we were no Maritime Naval Academy, and he was a little nasty, and that was his reputation. So I got to know him, and after I got to know him, he treats everybody so. That this legislator said, don't do that. He says, think about it, and he's not picking on you. He talks to everybody the same way. So I said, okay. He says, the next morning you'll forget. And that was true.
Now, you mentioned your wife said she thought living in California would be fine. You wound up, I assume, in the president's house on campus.
Yeah.
How did you enjoy life living on campus?
I liked it. I had a house on campus. Can we stop that a minute?
Yep.
Talk about the bad side like that. You can't eliminate it. I'm telling you.
Well, I would look at it this way, Joe. This is a historic record.
Yeah.
It's going to be for researchers, you know, who they want to know about all the sides of the institution. And this is going to be, this is going to be.
Everybody was helping me.
I know. But it, it helps to know, you know, be candid about your experiences. You're not insulting anybody.
Well, that's true. I could do a little more, but that's.
And part of it is a historic researcher wants to hear, you know, what you went through.
Well,
if you had challenges living in that house, then.
Well, what hurt me is, this is, we don't need a Naval Academy in California.
Yeah. Well, but that's, I mean, it's important that people understand, because don't forget at that point, we so many of us today are, have been, this institution's been part of the CSU for a decade now. But people tend to forget that up until that time, for well over 60 years, you were out there floating on your own, and you were dealing with a legislature that very often saw you, and they looked at the per unit cost of educating your students and thought, we can spend this money a lot of different ways.
When somebody figured that the cost would be more, so I did a little research. I researched my students that graduated 8 or 9 years and where they were and how much you were making. And I researched their pay and what they're paying to the government in taxes. And I could prove to the legislators, these kids are making enough money in taxes to pay for their education. These were kids that have been in the business 10 years or five, whatever, a long time.
Yeah.
So that was a big help.
Yeah. Tell me again a little bit about living in the house there on campus with
the
family.
It was fine. Oh, yeah. It was a nice home. I mean, I didn't expect anything huge. It was comfortable, and my wife and I were happy there, living right on campus.
Now, being the wife of a campus president and living on campus sometimes can be a bit of a challenge. Did your wife have any problems with that?
No, we had parties. Everybody liked the parties. My wife was a very sociable lady, and I think everybody liked her, unless you heard different, I don't know.
No.
No, she was a, she was an ex-movie actress, and we were married, and I told her, you know, this is kind of a life. Well, she thought it'd be exciting, so we did well.
Yeah.
My wife and I got along great. She had parties, everybody used to come. They liked her because she was the life of the party. She's singing and dancing, everybody's singing. That was great.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about some highlights over your, you know, more than 10-year tenure at the Academy.
Now, remember this now. I had been in the Merchant Marine. I worked hard in the Merchant Marine, and I worked for the U.S. lines out of New York, sailing all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it, and I was doing very well. I was hoping maybe I could be superintendent someday, but then the war came, and I was chief mate of a container, first container ship. We were 3 days out of Australia when the war started. And I got a call from the office, he got orders to active duty, because I was already a naval officer, reserve officer. So I had to think about that, and I thought, gee, that's a good opportunity for me, because I know in the Navy I can do a lot better in education, particularly because they sent me through all the colleges. Well, when I came back, I had an excellent reputation in the maritime industry. My reputation was well known in the U.S. lines. I was doing very wonderful. So the superintendent says, you know, you don't have to go on active duty. You're working in a wartime organization, so you don't have to do that. He didn't know that I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Because I could see a future for me better than him. But anyway, so I left. He said, okay, we'll pay your retirement fund. When the war's over, we'd like to have you come back. And I said, okay to that, because I don't know where I'd be at the end of the war. The end of the war came, and I got a letter from the superintendent. Well, we want you back now. And he told me that the superintendent was going to be retiring soon. I want you to work under him. You could be our future. But that wasn't enough to convince me. I thought, I got, now the Navy's made me a USN officer instead of a USN officer, which I was just another officer in the Navy, and I knew that would make me available for colleges, opportunities that I didn't have in Merchant Marine. So I decided I was going to make a career in the Navy because the Navy, I spoke to the Navy, said, you've got a wonderful record and we'll see that you go to the colleges. Yeah. I said, if you do that, I'll stay. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
So that was my, and after 10 years of that, all this education I had, all this training at the top level of government and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I was able to have confidence that I could do these things. Uh-huh. And that helped me quite a bit, and I had a wonderful reputation in the military, right up on top.
Now, just before you became president, or superintendent first and then president of the Academy, the Academy admitted its first minorities, African Americans and Filipinos.
I have.
Yeah.
Yes.
What sorts of challenges did that present for you in administering that? Was there any resistance?
Well, I felt it was unfair to do that. That we should give them a chance, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I had support from the faculty, a lot of the faculty, and the big. No, I didn't. I thought that was a good opportunity for the Maritime Academy. It's good publicity, and they deserve it. If they could do it, why not? I was for them. Mm-hmm. And then if I had any trouble academic, I developed a program where the officer cadets were really sharp, and we could give them a job to train not only to help people who are not making the grades on their own. We would pay them a salary or something, I don't remember, but that's the way we ran it. Mm-hmm. And it did very well, and I got some good people. Some of them did well in the Merchant Marine, which I'm proud of.
Now, during World War II, in fact, before that in the Navy, it had been the tradition that African Americans and Filipinos tended to work as stewards on board the ship and were not given the opportunity. Did that? And also, you're right there next to Mare Island, which is a big Navy facility. Was there a climate of resistance because of that tradition?
No, I didn't feel that. Because remember, my parents were foreigners. And I thought that was a good idea. They deserve it. Mm-hmm. I deserved it. I got an opportunity. My parents were Italians. And back in those days, you weren't available in those days, but in those days, everybody that was came from a immigrant family suffered a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the Navy was good at that. I mean, I enjoyed the Navy, and I wanted other people to have the same opportunity I had.
Now, the next big step, about a year after you came in, was the admission of the first women to the Academy.
I was for that.
Now, what role did you play in that change?
I thought it was an opportunity for the Academy to get good publicity. I thought I had no problem with a lady being an officer because I've been aboard a number of Russian ships where their skippers were women. And I got a little flack from some of the students, but I could handle that. Mm-hmm. No, I think that was a good opportunity for the women to break into the Merchant Marine. I thought they could be officers just like they are in the Russian merchant ships. I was aboard and saw them and talked to them. I was impressed.
Yeah.
All I had to do is ensure that it didn't cause commotion in the student body. I expected that, so I wasn't surprised. But our lady that was the first one, she did very well. She master of a big liner, president of the company. Congratulations to the lady. The California Maritime Academy had loved it. Now, the students could have raised hell and forced me maybe to do something, but I wasn't about to do it.
Yeah.
And I think what helps is my arguments are convincing, and they know I really mean business. I believe in this, in that thing. Oh, they did well. And I was, I had calls from other academies, Joe, what are you starting here? And they're all my friends, so we just laughed about it. I said, you guys better get on the bandwagon.
Where did the women live, those first women that came on board?
On the ship. I think it was on the ship. That's what, that was my argument. We need more room to expand the student body. And I don't remember whether, I think they lived on the ship, but they knew that we were, they knew that I was arranging more room for them. The architect was, it's a long time ago, but everything was going pretty good. I didn't expect them to jump and say, force me to do anything about the women. I convinced them these women deserve a break. The Russians can do it. Why can't our American women do it?
Yeah. I've talked to some women, some of the early women who were there, who told me that there were still, while there was a general, you know, this was a breakthrough, there were still people, both other students and some faculty, who...
That was true. That's true.
They were really resistant to it, and that there was kind of a
that
subtle...
That was minor. Was, you know, the main body didn't... Yes, there were groups of people that were kind of opposed to it, but I don't think they're really serious. I think they're... I didn't take them serious.
Yeah. Now, the period from 76 to 78 particularly was a huge period of construction growth.
Absolutely.
I ran down the list. We had, now, let me clarify. One thing on the list was the administration building, president's conference room. Was the administration building that we know now already, that was already built? You added the conference room to it?
Yeah, that was built. There was another building I built. We called the Student Union.
Yeah. But the conference room was an addition that took place during your tenure, adding that big meeting room down at the end of that hall.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. It was next to the president's office.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we had the president's conference room, we had the lower residence building, plant operations, the student center, the auditorium, an extension of the library, a welding lab, and the faculty building and mini park in 83. Now, if you look at that calendar, the first really big burst of construction took place about 4 years after you became president.
Yeah.
So my guess was that during that period, you were doing a tremendous amount of work laying the groundwork. And you talked a little bit about that, talking with the legislature, talking with...
Yeah, I was fighting.
Who else did you enlist in that? I mean, did you get industry to help you convince the legislature?
Yes. I appointed, asked it. Some of the industry leaders, if they'll become an advisor to the president, and I think so that I could tell them, so that they could see what I'm doing and get their concurrence or get their ideas, if they had better ideas, see what they thought of it. And we'd meet once or twice a year. I had a meeting with them, and they were to let them there so that they were got a good idea where I was going, and if I was going where they might have a comment, I wanted to hear it. I wanted their support. So that's why I did that, and I did well with those people.
Well, obviously you did when you look at all the things you got built during that period.
Oh, yeah, I did a lot of things that nobody knows about. We, the 1 year, the budget was tight, and the legislator says we can't provide money for fuel. Well, it's true, is they didn't have the money. They had all these other state colleges. And I said, oh my God, without fuel, we training academy's no good if we don't have our kids on ships sailing on the training ship. So I was out of the Navy, and I knew that the Navy had laid up ships around the country, and Admiral Zumwalt was chief of the naval operation. I was his chief of staff when we were running the Vietnam War. So I called the admiral. I said, there's a couple of battleships up in Seattle that they're laying there for years. And if I can't get their oil, we probably may not have an academy. The state's not going to fund oil for a cruise. So he said, well, let me talk to my logistics people, he did. I told him it wouldn't cost it, we'll do the work, and it's really desperate, we need it. And he knew me well enough that I was desperate.
And so these were mothballed ships that the Navy had, that had fuel in them?
They were battleships, big ones.
Yeah.
I sent my engineers up to check it out, to see, is it going to be okay, can we do it? And that, so my chief engineer went up and he came back, he says, yeah, we can do it. Then I talked to, who's that tugboat man? Crowley. I said, Tom Crowley, if we get if the Navy gives us that oil, can you handle it? Can you barge it? He said, well, I said, I don't think it was going to cost you anything. You'll have to send your barge up there and get it out. Well, it cost him a lot of money. But anyway, he said, well, okay, we'll give it a try. Well, he saved my neck. And so Zumwalt said, okay, as long as it doesn't cost the Navy anything. I said, it won't cost the Navy. So I turned it, after my engineers looked at it, and they said it could be done. They said, that oil looks thick down there, and we're going to have problems. And I said to Crowley, can you heat that thing? And I think I don't remember now, but somebody heated it anyway. And so they were having a hard time. That oil had been sitting there for a long time.
Closer to tar than oil, I bet you.
So, yeah. So they pumped the oil on the barge. Then I said, can you tow that to San Francisco? What's his name? Crowley.
Yeah.
Can you tow that down to San Francisco? We can put one of the Chevron tanks down there. He says, oh, we can't do that. We just can't handle it. And so he said, well, why don't you do this? What's the oil company? Chevron.
Chevron.
There's a Chevron tank up here. See if you can get them we can tow it to that. So I called somebody in Chevron, told them my predicament, and I said, don't you have a Chevron tank down? Oh, can we do it? Can we put that oil in the Chevron tank and give it to you? And then I'll take oil out of your tank. It's next to the academy, and it won't cost us anything. And they agreed to do that. That was a lifesaver. And Crowley did that. And I used to meet with Crowley for lunch every once in a while because he was interested in the academy, and he was a supporter, and he liked me. When I retired, he gave my wife and I a free cruise on one of his passenger liners that he was running around Africa, around South America.
It's a great story. Now, what was the state of the maritime industry in that 10-year period or so when you were at the academy?
I think the state of the maritime industry. Yes, it was undergoing change because you're shifting from oil to diesel, and the companies wanted diesel engineers. And it was hard to get diesel engineers, so I talked to my engineer and said, can you set up a diesel program that'll meet Coast Guard requirements, and we'll set up a separate class for people who are out in the field. They take this program, will the Coast Guard accept that qualification for a diesel license? And we came out okay on that. I mean, I don't remember the details, but the engineers and ourselves all agreed Coast Guard would do it, so we did that. So we set up a course at the academy. The engineers set up a course that met Coast Guard requirements so that they could get a diesel engineer. Great. Now, so these people would have a chance to get jobs on diesel ships. People out in the field could come, if they didn't have a diesel line, take that short course. We're making money because we're selling it to them. And that worked.
You remember how long the short course was?
I think it's a little over a month, not sure. But the engineers handled it, and I had confidence if the Coast Guard approved it.
And that was delivered on campus, the short
course?
That
was delivered on campus.
Okay. What about recruiting faculty? What sort of challenges do you have? I mean, it's always been a challenge for the Academy to find people who have a combination of real-life practical skills, particularly in technology fields, and educational skills.
Yeah, I had a hard time. What I did on that, I had some good, bright people. We're not late, are we?
No.
I had some young people that were, I thought, were bright, interested. John Cheever was my star. And I wanted to make him head of department, because the head of department there was fine on sailing ships. But anyway, I thought we needed a younger fellow, so I told John, John, why don't you get a degree from college? We'll arrange, you're a faculty member, we'll change your courses so you can take courses at the, when you're not teaching or at nighttime. He went for that, he got his degree. And I said, boy, this guy's going to be a president someday. I had my eye on him, because he was smart. You know him, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Is he still smart?
He's getting close to retiring, and boy, he's contributed so much to the academy.
Just he was one of my stars, and I was hoping that he would continue your education, because I can't see a president being, a new president being appointed without some college degrees. But,
now, aside from
and
diesel,
then I did that for an engineer.
Yeah.
We sent him to Michigan, and we paid his way, and he was able to get his degree in engineering from the University of Michigan.
Aside from diesel engineering, what other positions did you have difficulty finding people for? What kind of skills were you particularly looking for during this evolution of the academy?
Management and leadership, because I know that leadership is the most important quality for success, and it's not the academic program, it's leadership. So I was trying to come up with what areas of academia would strengthen a person's leadership ability and his ability to initiate projects and able to handle them, not handle people. And so I think, I don't remember all the courses. We added courses. We got accredited, fine, great. And then my hopes were master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
But then after 11 years, I would have done it because I wanted to do it. But my health wasn't good.
Yeah.
I worked harder than I ever did in my life, and I enjoyed my work. I was up 7 days a week preparing speeches, speaking all up and down the coast in California, establishing a reputation. People were calling me, and the industry was liking what I was doing. But boy, I paid a price. I mean, but I was willing to die for it, because I wanted that academy to be a college. So, when I retired in, I think, 82, I said, now, I know that the board of directors and board of governors want me to stay, and I don't want to hurt their feelings. The board of directors are really supporting me 100%, and I owe them some loyalty. So I talked to the chairman of the board. He was a black man. Randy Osborne, good man. Supported me 100%. So it came time, I said to the board, I can't handle this job. You're going to have a younger man. And I hated to do that, but because I felt I was letting them down. I wasn't letting them down. I just couldn't continue. I was worn out. So I said, okay, the first year. But the next year I said, gentlemen, I just can't make it. You need a younger man. 7 days a week will warm me out a lot.
Yeah.
You know, later on, I got a heart attack, and they caught me at the time and saved it. And then Crowley sent me on a nice trip free for my wife and I. And I thought, no phones, no calls, no responsibility. Jeez, I could go back to the academy. No, I couldn't.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what I went through. But I was willing to give it everything I had.
Yeah.
That's what I thought of the academy. I wanted that academy number one.
Now, the academy at that point had just about, just before you came, acquired the, what was the previous training ship, Golden Bear, to the one we have now.
Yes, that's right.
It was the old Crescent City.
That's right.
How well did that ship work for you as a training ship?
That was a wonderful ship. Terrific. The new ship. Mm-hmm. See, I'll tell you, I've been lobbying for that new ship for a long time. I didn't get it while I was on active duty. We got it when I was retired. So, and a good friend of mine, he's in jail. What's his name? Randy Cunningham. Do you remember him?
No. It's before my time.
Well, he's a guy who was selling contracts. He was a congressman. Oh, I should.
Oh, Duke. Yeah, I know him, yeah.
Keep back. Okay. With it. Anyway, you can cut that out. Yeah. I don't want to say anybody. He's my friend. Was. So, one time, and I was calling him, why can't you get that ship? You're on the House Rachel Green for committee. And, of course, maybe he didn't have the power to do it. But one day he called me up. I was retired. He said, Joe, I got you the ship. Will you tell the academy? I said, great. So I called the president's office. I didn't get the president. I was, what's her name?
Mary.
Mary. And I said, tell Mary you got a ship. And they're going to give it to you. And so Mary, take over from there, and it's yours. But and also write a letter, thank you. So one day I was at a lunch. Randy was there. Oh, I should.
Go ahead.
Cut that out later.
Okay, yeah.
Because he was my friend. He's not my friend now. I didn't know he was doing that. He says, Joe, I'm peeved. We had lunch. Well, what are you peeved about, Randy? He says, I got you a ship and I never got anything for it. I says, Randy, you got a letter thanking you for me and the president. I didn't know what his other motive was until I read this stuff in the paper years later.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, I wonder if he was thinking I was... Anyway, don't...
Now, going back to the training ship that you had during the years you were there, this was the one before the current Golden.
Yeah.
How did that ship work for you?
Well, it was... The living arrangements were poor. Midshipmen weren't living right. And it wasn't a good training ship. And I lobbied in Congress one time. And the Coast Guard, one of the assistant Coast Guard commandant, was there lobbying, and he was one of my students at the National War College. What are you doing? I said, well, I'm trying to get a training ship for my... He says, oh, hell, you can send them on merchant ships. You don't need a training ship. I said, the hell I don't. So that was just a conversation, and he's a nice guy. And sure enough, I was surprised when I got a call. I said, you got a training ship for the academy, tell them. And Mary Lyons handled it after that. She got the state to, I don't know what she did, to make it a state college.
Yeah.
I think she did.
Yeah, the state university.
Yeah. And also, we're a unit of the university now.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that the enrollment of the school was about 200 when you started as president. Do you remember what it was about the time you left?
About 500, I think.
Pretty,
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was enrolled. Oh, there were lots of jobs when they found the new program. The companies were coming to me and taking all the people wanted jobs. One of the company is an international company. They built a lot of stuff in Arabia. I forget their name, a very prominent company. I talked to him over the phone. I says, what are you doing with all my engineers? You want them all. And he said, well, I tell you, your engineers, we're sending them all over the world, stationary engineers, whatever they call them. And he said, they not only can sit in professional meetings, but they can fix it themselves. I thought, that's great. That's a good reputation to have. So those engineers went jobs all over the place.
What was your cruise cycle? What time of the year were you running cruises? Were you doing just one? Now, you know, right now we're doing one full 4 months, but it's broken into two cruise segments.
One when I was there.
Yeah.
That would be, I think it's actually 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Were those in the springtime, though?
I think it was springtime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And whereabouts did they, was it pretty much Pacific Ocean?
Yeah, Western Pacific.
Anything through the Panama Canal?
Yeah, there was one through the Panama Canal. I don't remember that. Yeah, but they were getting every place.
At some point, we stopped going through the canal because of the cost.
That's right.
Do you know when that happened?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Let's see. I know they were going to the Pacific, Japan, and the Orient, South America. I'm not sure when we stopped that.
In 1977, there were a series of things that happened academically. You went from a 3 to a 4 year program.
Right.
And you got WASC and ABET accreditation. Again, I'm assuming that getting to that point took a lot of field work. Came in, you said that you really wanted to upgrade the school, and I'm assuming that taking it to a 4 year school was one of your goals and getting accreditation.
That's right. Pushed hard for it because I wanted the faculty to support me because some of the faculty had different opinions. They weren't mad, or else they wanted better faculty members. I don't know, but I wanted that accreditation, and I wanted the people that could support for accreditation. And there was a couple of people that were excellent back in the 40s or before the war. They didn't have a college degree themselves, but there were a couple, and they were old, and they just retired quietly.
Well, what are the things that you had to get done to get accreditation from WASC and ABET? What changes did you have to make to get that accreditation?
The academic program, and I had some academicians that helped me. There were two of them were on the board, and they helped me. And I by this time I had my degrees also, and I got my degrees in the Navy. And also, I think some of the faculty people felt we should have more better faculty. Some of them were all for it, mm-hmm. but no one's going to say who should go. But no, it was okay. We were doing fine. I was satisfied. I had a terrific dean. I can't think his name. He was a president of a technical school, graduate of West Point. And boy, he was really rough. Not rough, but that was his nature. But they liked him because he carried the credibility. He had been a college president of technical school. And he was military. He was a... I can't think of his name. I just got a call from him. He's in a rest home or a hospital now. And every Christmas, we got together here in California, he and his wife. And I also brought him Christmas presents because he liked his scotch. Mm-hmm. So I bring him a bottle of scotch. I forgot the name of it. And we met every Christmas. And suddenly his wife died. And I got a call from him 3 weeks ago. And he got my brochure. Mm-hmm. He said, "Holy Moses, Joe, you sure deserve that because I know how hard you work." He was really surprised. He complimented me. I said, "Yeah, you know how hard I work. Damn right I worked hard."
Yeah.
But anyway, it was my good friend. He's laid up. I asked my wife several weeks ago, I said, "What kind of scotch did I use to buy him? I want to send him a bottle for Christmas because he's not going to be here." And so when I talked to him, I said, "I'm going to send a bottle of that stuff he liked, I can't remember." He says, "Don't bother, Joe, because I can't have it." He was, I think, my best dean.
Yeah. You, I gather, worked pretty hard at forging good ties with the Vallejo community.
Oh, yeah. You know what the Vallejo community told me? They said, "You're the first guy that's ever given us a time of day. We never could get on that campus." I said, "Well, they said, we can now." What I did I joined the round, what is it? Club you're
at? Rotary.
Rotary. And I became president of Rotary, and I was doing well, and I was president of all these other organizations, a whole list of them. I have a plaque full of them. And I was invited to, with the, all the major organizations. I'll read, let me see.
I got it. Oh, careful.
Wow. I got these plaques in case you can get pictures of me because I can't write all that stuff. We have time?
Sure.
Here's one book.
It's about 11.
Barbara Boxer gave me a congressional award. I was surprised.
Yeah.
Well, I was a president, and Barbara Boxer came in and said who she was. She's running for office. Would I help her? Could she talk to the Rotary? I said, sure, you can talk to the Rotary. I was president. She talked to the Rotary, and I got acquainted with her. She got acquainted with me. So we helped her. I mean, we knew her. She wanted to. I supported her anyway. And then she became a congresswoman. And we were good friends by that time. She said, I'm on the House Merchant Marine Fisheries Committee. I don't know anything about it. I said, well, if you have any trouble, let me know. Send me the stuff. I'll help you. So I did that. And I did help her a lot. And boy, she never forgot that.
Yeah.
So, this is from Barbara. This is from Admiral. This is a retirement. Mayor Cartola. Yeah, I had wonderful. The population there, I think I was their hero. They liked the fact that they could come to the academy. The business people could come, and even the unions. I got support from the unions. The unions asked me, and I said, well, we leave management on. Sure, you can come and talk to the students, make arrangements with me, and we'll clear it. There's no reason why you can't talk to the students. So, and I was popular with the unions because I was helping them in a good way for the academy, and I wanted them to help me. So they had a big session in my honor up in the mountains somewhere in the woods. I don't remember the place. And they appreciated the way I handled their unions. And they were going down to Los Angeles for a major reunion of the unions, an annual thing. And I said, well, when you get down there, why don't you support the academy lobbying? And they did. They passed a resolution that they supported the academy, and it went to the legislators. And boy, those people really tried to get the legislators out. So I had a good arrangement with the unions. They were very nice. I think something happened one time. And what happened? So I got disgusted with what happened. And I was one of the union leaders, I guess, asked me, oh, what's wrong? I said, Jesus, you know, they're going to do this to the academy or do something. I don't know what it was. And that's not good for us. And I think what he said is this. Well, we know, I don't remember details. Well, we can do something about that. We'll call. And he called up from my office. What? And it was changing somebody. I don't remember anymore. So, the union man says, well, he says, we know it. We can get that change for you. What do you want? So I told him. And he sat there and he called up the governor. He said, say, governor, what did you do this for? This, that, whatever it was, I don't remember. And change it. And so the union was good to me. Here's the other things. the academy from a 4-3 trace with an accredited 4-year maritime college, achieved the distinction and reputation of being the preeminent maritime college in the nation. When I retired, the head of the maritime, what is it, commissioner, awarded me a big plaque and said this is the number one maritime college in the nation. That was good publicity.
Yeah.
Did you read that?
No.
Yeah. Well, here it says, the maritime college that has achieved the distinction and reputation of being a preeminent state maritime college in the nation. Having achieved the goal he set forth for the maritime college, Admiral Rizzo expects to retire in November 1983. Whereas upon his, he was awarded the Second Legion of Merit with Gold Star from the President of the United States, while I got a lot of others in the Navy. Joint Service, that's all those commendations and medals from the Navy. Which ones? Anyway, there, and one of them lists all the organizations in Vallejo that I was either head of or helped running.
You were very generous in creating an endowment for the Academy. What was your thinking behind that?
Well, my thinking about that was that I wanted this Academy to move and open the... I wanted the Academy to establish a speakers program that would invite speakers, knowledgeable speakers of reputation, because I had one in here, the biggest one, 200 people, and it was the most popular thing in San Diego area. I was a president, I organized it because I got outstanding speakers that were authorities in their field. And I thought, that's not my academy, so I suggested, you know, it's working for me, you might try it. I think the man you work for would
Dunsworth.
Yeah, so I dealt along with him. The president never dealt with me, but Dunsworth was easy to talk to, and I told him, and he was interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, the speakers I got here were gave us the world reputation down here,
yeah.
And it's an opportunity for the Academy to bring him in.
Yeah.
And the students, they're in the forefront of change. Mm-hmm. The students can listen to these people and the changes in science and all, and from that they can deduct ideas that they could develop by research and expand, because it's what we did down here, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Spark their imagination.
What's your proudest accomplishment as president of the Academy?
Well, to have an Academy that's number one in the United States at that time and had a good reputation, and we're turning out students who are going to be big in the industry, not just on the ship. And I think they will be. Another thing I did, when the ship went on a cruise, we used to rent the rooms out. We needed the money to organizations. And that money, plus I was making money on the fuel oil because I was drawing fuel oil from Chevron that I got free from the Navy. I made arrangements to buy a diesel simulator, the most modern at that time in the world. And we accomplished that, I think we bought it in Sweden. And we set up a diesel course for our people plus a diesel course. I think that was a major and didn't cost the state anything. Now, I could have gotten in trouble. The state wondered how I got that money. And I thought, well, did I do something wrong?
One thing I would say, Joe, from listening to you talk, I've come to a greater appreciation of your skills as a horse trader.
That's the only way we were going to go.
Yeah.
But I didn't do anything crooked. I wasn't doing that. I had a good reputation.
Yeah. You sound like a good military logistics person. If you can't find it, you'll trade it for somebody for something else.
Yeah, I had a lot of friends because I was speaking all over California, a lot of Rotary clubs. They even sent a plane to pick me up with one of them.
What were some of your most enjoyable moments as president?
when the academy or the students did something noteworthy, that they got it, and they got a lot of credit for it. And when the industries come and say, we want all the engineers we can get. Wow, that to me was great. What's that big company? It's an international company that told me they'll take every graduate because they can fix it, in addition to being on top.
And what question didn't I ask you that I should have? Is there anything I haven't asked you?
I think you covered, I told you more than I was going to tell you, because I'm sure that you're not going to put stuff that people don't like. But I could handle it. I had, what helped me a lot is the fact that I had all this experience before I took over the academy, education. The Navy sent me to University of Washington for 4 years. I told the Navy, without a degree, I can't stay in the Navy. We'll send you there. You have an outstanding record. Not only that, you are now a USN. We want you as a member of the... So I went there. When I went there, I thought, I got to get the dean to let me take 2 years in one. So I went to the dean. I had all these papers about my academic record. It was number one ever before. So the dean says, you can't do that. And I said, well, look, I'm a married man. I'm going to college. I'm not interested in anything except getting a degree and educating myself for the future. So I went down sitting in the coffee shop, and I was this little glum person comes down sitting there and said, is there something wrong? I said, yeah. I said, that damn dean won't let me take 2 years in one. And I said, I'm not interested in anything in the college except my degree in education. My wife is with me. And he said, and I showed him my credentials, and I told him I was a master mariner, 6 years at sea with, and you know who it was? He was the editor of your textbook on seamanship at the academy. Huh. He was the chairman of the Department of Transportation, and he says, why? He says, I'm on the board. I'll change that. There's no reason why you can't do that. I said, yeah, I can do it. I can work at nighttime, daytime. I don't care about these social affairs. I care about getting a degree. I graduated first, Phi Beta Kappa, and then I got an offer from a think tank. I can't think of their name. They're a big think tank. They're in the papers all the time. I said, no, I didn't accept it. So there I got 2 years right there with all kind of academic awards. And then after that, they sent me to the school at the Naval War College. I went through that, came out first, so they sent me to see it, and then come back, and they made me a faculty member in the head of the strategy and tactics department. And I was head of department, made major changes and improved it so people would take the strategy and tactics course.
What year was that?
Well, let's see, I read after I retired. It was 2 years at college, this 1982-84. Around 80, I don't remember anymore. But anyway, it's all in writing, like yeah. All these awards, and it's in the book.
Okay.
Did you read
yeah.
that book?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so anyway, I had it there. And this guy is an authority on the Mercer Marine. He's the editor of the textbook your people are studying up there. John Keever's one of the editors that made some changes.
Yeah.
Can't think of his name. He says, why, there's no reason why you can. He says, I'm on the board. Next day, I got it. So then I went to, I was an instructor in strategy and tactics. After I finished the course, they sent me to CA, come back. And after that, I got major jobs all the way up the line. I ended up Well, it's in the book. I ended up, I was sent as in the, as the commanding officer of the advisory group in Korea. I ran their Navy. Hmm. I did a lot of work for them.
Yeah.
I built them a maritime academy for, I thought your naval officers should. And I run the budget. It was U.S. money, so I had to be careful that the U.S. money was not being grasped or being used improperly, because it was in certain cases, but they didn't know better, and they didn't mean to, and they did whatever I thought was right. I said, you can't do that. This is U.S. funds, and it won't, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I think, I don't want to get into that, so yeah. I'll get in trouble.
Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I appreciate
and then,
your time.
And then I was sent to Vietnam. Zumwalt wanted me. I wanted to go someplace, but anyway, somebody said, don't turn him down, Joe. He's going to be somebody in a nice way. So I was chief of staff. I worked there. And then I, from there, I was selected to head the Congressional Research Service, which would require me to live in Washington and retire from the Navy, and I don't, my wife wouldn't like that. So I did accept that mandate, and then shifted me to the National War College to be the, to run the National War College. And at the National War College, I thought, say, these guys should be getting a master's degree. They're all well educated before they get here.
Yeah.
And so the president said, go ahead and make the change. So I worked hard for that.
Yeah.
And what happened was, I was going to school at nighttime at Boston University for my master's degree, academic dean of the National War College. I finished that, and what was it? What helped? I already had my master's degree from Boston University, by the way. They offered me a job as on the faculty, but I wasn't interested. I wanted to stay in the Navy. And when I got to Washington, I was in the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I worked for the president, and I wrote major policy papers, which I enjoyed doing. But I did a lot of research and study, and already I had a good education to fill that job. And then